And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Bior.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to Minnesota's defense is the worst in college football edition 2020. And I'm not entirely sure that there's a lot that's going to change that. But before we introduce our special guest that'll be joining us here on the breakdown today, Luke, do you want to give the folks a word from our sponsor?
Yes. Once again, the Goal Line Club is sponsoring Gopher Gridiron Radio. Again, the Goal Line Club is a booster club that you can join for a very nominal fee that supports Gopher football. So if you're interested in connecting with other Gopher fans and just finding another way to introduce yourself to new people and connect, right, that's a great way to do it. But also if you want to support Gopher football in a monetary way, joining the Goal Line Club is a great way. So go to goalineclub.org to sign up. Check out the events they have. They have one coming up for the Iowa game. I think that's it's going to be 11-2. So November 2nd will be that event. Again, it'll be another virtual event. But again, goalineclub.org.
I'm thinking it's not November 2nd because November 2nd is Monday.
Okay, well, that's why you got to go to goalineclub.org. Whatever.
There it is. And so joining us as always on these breakdown editions of the podcast is former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, my second cousin, and the smartest football person I have the pleasure of knowing, Mr. Derek Burns. Derek, how are things for you today? And how disgusted from that game on Friday are you?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me back, guys. I appreciate coming on. Win or lose, I do enjoy talking college football. It was, you know,
I noticed
frustrating
you said college football, not Minnesota football there. Should I be reading anything into that?
Yeah, well, some college football is usually better than no college football, but with the frustrations this year, it's been painful. I know it is for Gopher fans, but be that as it may, there are things to talk about. There are things we can learn from Saturday, and I'm always, you know, I do enjoy talking, you know, schemes and talent and technique and things like that, because having people learn from that and you know, being able to. I think it brings another level of enjoyment when things are better to know what went wrong, seeing college kids grow, seeing, you know, things turn around, which we all hope it does. So this is obviously a low point, but like I said, there are things to talk about.
Yeah, for as good as last season was, I think this season has been about as bad as it can be so far. Again, this is a pandemic shortened season, so it's not going to be a season that we're used to. We don't get the non-conference season to kind of break things in. If you remember last season, even the Gophers struggled early in the non-conference and slowly got better. Our only hope now is to pin that. We pin our hope on the idea that they will get better as the season goes on. This was a 45-44 loss to the Maryland Terrapins, a team that arguably is probably going to be one of the bottom teams in the entire Big Ten this year. And basically the Gophers found a way to lose at one point having a 97.4% winning percentage. If you follow the win probability on ESPN. But alas, here we are. So I think I want to start with some positives before we kind of get into the negatives. We'll focus a lot of the negatives on the defense, but offensively, a career game for Mo Ibrahim. Tanner Morgan looked pretty solid. Ibrahim ran for 207 yards and 4 touchdowns on 41 carries. That in its own right is a bit shocking, the fact he had 41 carries. Tanner Morgan, 10 for 15, 189 yards and a touchdown. And Chris Ottman-Bell finally had a little coming out party in the second game of the season with 4 receptions, 112 yards and a touchdown. Mr. Ryan Burns, offensively, this team looked good in parts, right? They didn't look good early in the first part of the first quarter, but through the second and third quarter, they looked like a really good offense, really.
Yeah, through the first three quarters, it's hard, tough to argue, I guess, with the results, which were 38 points. Minnesota was essentially running the ball at will. They're running for the ball through three quarters, I believe, for over 6 yards a carry, and that inside zone game was working tremendously well. I thought Ibrahim had holes to run through, but he was also setting up his blocks incredibly well, setting up defenders incredibly well to make the first man miss and get vertical. And, you know, I guess we didn't talk about enough on the preview podcast, Luke, the revenge game narrative for Muhammad Ibrahim.
Right.
Because for those of you who don't know, he's from Baltimore. He's a Maryland kid. Maryland did not offer him out of high school. he wasn't committed anywhere. When PJ Fleck took the Minnesota job, he immediately offered Ibrahim. He was a part of that Friday night commitment spree where Minnesota had 8 commitments when Fleck took the job, and he was a part of that. And for him to come home and put up 204, I'm pretty sure he's a happy guy. Now, that being said, I mean, we'll get to the fourth quarter and kind of how risk averse and playing not to win ends up coming back with karma. But I think offensively, they had things working. Like I said, the zone running game, I thought the offensive line blocked it for the most part pretty well. I thought that Tanner Morgan was efficient with his arm. I mean, anytime you only throw 15 passes, it's tough to get a ton going through the passing game. But on 10 completions, he's nearly 19 yards per completion. Chris Ottman-Bell with some very, very good contested catches, showing that he is going to be the focal point of the passing offense in 2021. But Derek, you're the elite offensive line mind. What did you like about the zone running game, and what did you see that had it so effective for Minnesota on Friday night?
Well, the first thing is that I saw was Maryland made a their scheme was to take away RPO passing, at least through the first half. So they ran with an even box in run situation. So the Gophers had 6 blockers, they had 6 defenders in the box. And this is a theme developing now where Minnesota is able to run the ball really effectively, zone running against even boxes. This is going back to last year. In the Michigan game, despite some struggles, they were able to run the ball on Michigan, especially running straight at them with zone running and even boxes. So that's a good foundation to build on, because then you're going to force defenses to make an adjustment to try and take away that running game, and then which you can come back with RPO passing. So as the game wore on, Maryland did bring a safety down and run support, and that's where the RPO started clicking. And so Tanner was able to throw off that, and that resulted in some good passing. But you know, up front, starting with the offensive line, the zone running looks really good. And I actually thought the pass protection, individual pass protection in drop back, was improved versus Michigan. Now, there's certainly a little bit of talent difference, what Michigan brings in their front 7 on defense versus Maryland, but I thought both those things improved week over week.
So when we look at the offense, I think one of the things that kind of stood out to me, obviously they committed to the run and stuck to the run, you know, exclusively. I think, let's see, they ran the ball 50 times to only throwing it 15 times. But we started to see a little bit more diversity in the pass game. Daniel Jackson got his first reception, Chris Ottman-Bell with 4 receptions, Rashad Bateman with 5. This is something that, you know, we're going to have to see evolve as the season goes on. But, you know, we didn't, in the first game, we only saw them largely target, you know, Kokeef a little bit, but other than that, it was Rashad Bateman, right? And if this offense is going to be tough to stop, they have to have different weapons. And I was excited to see, you know, at least Jackson and Chris Ottman-Bell get some receptions and targets. Span Ford got a target, etc. I was encouraged by that, but I think the thing that really discouraged me was the fact that Mo Ibrahim toted the rock 41 times. That just seems like too much, Ryan.
It's far too much. And for as good as Mo Ibrahim was, I think if you go back and you watch the tape, and I'll be curious what you guys think about it, I thought in the fourth quarter, when it's carries 30 through 41 for Ibrahim, I thought he looked, I mean, what you would expect a college kid to look like on carries 30 through 40. He wasn't the same player. He was just a tad slower. And here's the interesting part is if you read it, my piece on Gopher Illustrated, I believe on Tuesday or Wednesday, when PJ Fleck spoke to the media, we asked him, what's the sweet spot for what you want to get Mo touches on a week? And he said probably somewhere between 20 and 25. And he had 20 touches at the half.
Yeah.
And you were sitting here thinking, okay, well, I understand Mo's playing really well, but you also want to make sure he's fresh for when you need him down the stretch. And that's where I would have loved to see Trayson Potts, number 3, get some more carries, because you look at what he was able to do on the night on his 3 carries, he gets 15 yards per carry. I thought he looked good. It wasn't like he put the ball on the ground, he missed a block, he missed a hole. I thought he was playing well, yet Minnesota just continued to ride him down the stretch. And that's where, if you're PJ Fleck, and I think this does fall on PJ Fleck, not running back coach Kenny Burns, is Fleck's got to have the confidence to use more Trayson Potts. And if not Trayson Potts, you got to find someone you do trust, because Cam Wiley went from getting a few carries against Michigan to getting zero offensive snaps. Trayson Potts was the only other running back to get a snap. And you just can't have a guy get 41 carries in a specific game. And down the stretch, you could see now Maryland did load the boxes, and we'll get into the abomination that was fourth quarter play calling here. But Derek, 41 carries is a lot. And for a kid that's not the biggest guy in the world to begin with, he's not Derrick Henry. He's not 6'3", 240. Mo is all of 5'8", 210. It seemed to me that for as good as Mo was, I mean, you certainly saw down the stretch, he was tired.
Yeah, I did think he got gassed on, and that combined with the fact that Maryland did change their scheme in the second half. They ended up running a plus one box for most of the second half. And believe it or not, early on, Minnesota still had success running into a plus one box, which maybe, you know, resulted in them getting a little bit greedy, thinking that, okay, well, even if they run plus one, we're still able to run the ball. That's what we're going to stick with. And I think that caught up with them in the fourth quarter. But yeah, I thought that Trayson did really good job. Early on, he missed one read on an outside zone, but other than that, he got better and did well both on inside and outside zone. Sometimes early in a running back's career, they can get comfortable with one type of running and not as comfortable with others. I thought he looked good on both. And then you combine that with the fact that they weren't running a lot of complex pass blocking and things like that. You know, that's another thing that would keep you away from a young running back. And I don't think that was the case either. So, you know, maybe it got away from them a bit, you know, not realizing or, you know, understanding how many carries were piling up for Mo. I think maybe got away from them, but I thought that Trayson did a good job, and I think if they had to do it over again, they would definitely provide a more even balanced mix in the second half.
I also wanted to note, like, when Axel Rushmeyer went down with injury, which hopefully that isn't a big injury. Maybe, Ryan, you have some insight on that. But did we see the line play deteriorate at all, Derek, with him going out? And I know that this is when they were getting definitely, you know, they definitely were running a plus one box, if not a plus two box at times there once Rushmeyer went out.
Yeah, I think they did. I think they did take a little bit of a step back, and that's to be expected. You've got five guys that have been running together in these first two games, and then you take one out. You've got a backup in there who struggled a bit, and then you lose a little bit of consistency with that same front five. Now you got a new guy in there, and like you said, you combine that with the fact that the defense was getting more, you know, run heavy in the second half, and those things added up. So, yeah, I think they did take a step back. It looked like, Ryan, unless you can confirm or not, looked like a high ankle injury, which the unfortunate part of that is that tends to be a nagging injury. So even if we do see him back, the reoccurrence of injury with something like that is pretty high. So hopefully hope for the best. I hope that's not the case, but yeah, it was, I would say that things took a little bit of a step down, you know, when they lost him.
Yeah. And that's the tough part is with these ankle injuries. I mean, I haven't heard one way or another if it's high or low, but if it's a high ankle sprain, I mean, we're talking about, he might be out the rest of the season, because high ankles, you're talking about 4 to 6 weeks. And for a kid in Axel Rushmeyer, who's not, and I don't mean this in as negative as it's going to sound, is not the most athletic lineman in the world. If you are take away some of his mobility with that ankle and his ability to plant and drive and all things that offensive linemen have to do, you just wonder how effective he would be. And that's where I mean, Luke, you asked Derek the question, but I agree that I think the line play certainly did deteriorate.
Yeah.
You look at that final drive of the game. I mean, it was Nathan Bowe's guy that was who's coming in. And that's where, if Axel cannot go this weekend against Illinois, I'm very curious to see what Brian Callahan does. Does he shift Blaze Andrews back to guard and put in J.J. Gaudet at right tackle? Does he put in Tyler Cooper, who's another guy that he talked up to me? And is it going to be Austin Byer? Because I didn't really see a lot from Nathan Bowe in that short time there against what isn't really known as a stout defensive line for Maryland. That made me think, boy, I think Nathan Bowe is potentially the answer here for the next few games. But We'll have to see, because, I mean, this has got to be figured out. And now Minnesota did move the ball in overtime. But, Luke, that fourth quarter.
Well, yeah.
It wasn't good, man.
No, it wasn't. I do need to fit this in before we get to the fourth quarter. I don't know. I mean, the Gopher defense struggled. The fourth quarter of the offense was abysmal. But did you notice how bad the announcers were? So bad at one point. One announcer, when Axel Rushmeyer went out, said that Hutchinson, Minnesota was Western Minneapolis, which I found so comical. I rewound it at least three times.
And I know Hutch is Western. I've heard of North Minneapolis, South Minneapolis. Yeah. I've never heard of Western Minneapolis.
I find it so funny. I'm like, is this guy have a map, or how is he coming up with this? Hutchinson is West Minneapolis. If he pulls up a map, he's got to realize that Minneapolis isn't geographically very big, and Hutchinson's like 30 to 40 miles away.
Also, Luke, did you know that Taulia Tungavaiola, do you know that his brother plays in the NFL? I didn't know until the TV announcers told me 55 times. And compared him to his older brother. Did you know that, Derek? I don't know if you watched the game live or just on the playback. Yeah. But Moses,
that was so bad.
Yeah, I don't pay a lot of attention to the announcers typically, but I paid enough attention to hear that several times.
Okay.
All right. So this fourth quarter, Luke. Yes. I mean, I think it's a combination of two things. Number one, you look at the end of the game, and how does Minnesota run the ball 50 times? But Tanner Morgan only throws it 15. And I thought Tanner was throwing the ball with a lot of success. And why that is important is because you look at the fourth quarter for Minnesota, they had three offensive drives, and I believe they ran 11 total plays. One of them was a pass, and it went for a first down. That was the only first down on the entire drive. And here's where I'm struggling, because I know it's something that we talked about in the pre-production meeting, is Maryland, as Derek alluded to, switched up their defense in the second half. They were plus one in the box. And Minnesota was struggling to run the ball. And then when it would get into an obvious passing down, Morgan would break the pocket, or Minnesota tries to go to a tunnel screen where it's Connor Olson in space against Chance Campbell, who's a linebacker. Chance Campbell's faster than Connor Olson, makes the play. Or Tanner Morgan falls down. Or I think the most egregious part of all of this is the final play that Minnesota ran in regulation. And I know it's something that Derek and I have already talked about, but here was the situation, and I wrote about it in my GIF rewinds on Gopher Illustrated. Maryland has nine players in the box. It's third and two for Minnesota. They have nine players in the box. Minnesota has seven blockers, so Maryland is plus two. And on the outside, you have Rashad Bateman and Chris Ottman-Bell in press man coverage, okay? Minnesota decides, yep, you know what we're going to do? We're going to run inside zone into a plus two box when we have the best passing quarterback in my lifetime, maybe the best receiver to put on a Gopher uniform in Rashad Bateman. And oh, by the way, that Chris Ottman-Bell guy, he's no slouch and he was playing well. I can't even fathom not throwing the ball in that instance, because all it takes is Bateman or Ottman-Bell to get a clean release off the line for a slant or a go, and it's a touchdown. Now, Derek, you're smarter than I am. What in the world was Minnesota doing on that play? And then what did you think about, and I'm not putting this really on Mike Sanford, Minnesota's offensive coordinator. I think this comes from PJ Fleck, the incredibly, incredibly conservative nature, because we've seen it before. We've seen Minnesota go into this turtle shell and just play to not lose instead of playing to win. And you can't do that in a Big Ten game. But what did you think about that final play regulation? What did you think about Minnesota deciding to be the most predictable offense in the Big Ten? And how do we even start to wrap our minds around what happened in the fourth quarter for the offense?
Well, I think if I'm trying to understand the thought process of the coaches, there are a couple things that play in. I think one of them we already talked about, which is the Gophers have had some success in the past running into plus one boxes. It's not unheard of. So that is one of the hopes. The other part of it is when your defense is suffering the way they were on Saturday, the conventional wisdom is let's run the ball to keep our defense off the field. So I understand that thought process, but
sure.
The problem with it is if you go three and out So if you don't have success running into those plus one, or as you mentioned, plus two boxes, you're going to go three and out and turn the ball back over to your defense anyway. So,
and it's going to be 90 seconds later and your defense is back on the field. Like you guys are alluding to, like, I understand you have a 3-score lead in the fourth quarter. You want to run the ball, but in the same breath, I get it on the first drive of overtime, but you had no success. The second drive, or the first drive of the fourth quarter, you had no success. Second drive of the fourth quarter, you had no success. And that's where, even to win the game on that final drive, they still didn't change it up. And it's just like, what are we doing here?
So, well, the frustrating part that you mentioned, I'll just underscore it, you know, from a schematic standpoint, is when a team runs plus one in the box, you generally are going to have single coverage on one side of the field. If a team runs plus two in the box, you're going to have single coverage everywhere. So there have been times in recent history when you've had Gopher offenses that see plus one or plus two every play. And the reason being is that they don't have the receiver talent to get off press coverage or to get open. Well, as you mentioned, Ryan, that's not the case now. You have wide receiver talent. You have the talent to be able to get open, and you have the talent that you want to throw into single coverage. And so on those plays that we're talking about, you obviously, they're going to run plus one, plus two. They're also going to run plus press coverage because they don't want to give up an easy pitch and catch. So you're going to have to throw downfield, but you're throwing downfield into single coverage with very talented wide receivers. So I would just make the case that that isn't as risky as it is with maybe previous Gopher offenses. And I think it gives you a pretty good shot. And as you mentioned, Ryan, if you're able to complete it, the game's over. It's a touchdown or it's an explosive play.
And that's a perfect example before I know Luke wants to get some thoughts in here, is this isn't Mitch Leidner to Rashad Still to win the game. It's Tanner Morgan to Rashad Bateman, two all Big Ten performers who were playing well in that game and have been playing well. There's a difference, and that's where you're just handcuffing your entire offense. I can't understand it. Luke, what do you think?
So I often talk about, you know, you want to take what the defense gives you, right? And in the situation that you laid out, Ryan, the defense is basically daring you to throw, correct? But the if I'm going to play devil's advocate, which I would never actually play this role, but this is what one would argue, is the reason you're going to run is because you can run clock, right? But this is in college football. If you throw three incomplete passes, you're looking at probably somewhere around like 20 to 30-ish seconds coming off the clock, right? If you run the ball three times, the most you're going to run off the clock is, it's a 40-second play clock, you're going to run 120 seconds, probably more like 115 seconds off the clock. I mean, the net gain is 60 seconds, right? It's a minute of gameplay. If you're guaranteed failure, you might as well take the risk versus the reward and throw the ball, in my opinion. But all that said, you bring up a great point. I told you this previously, but PJ Fleck history, he is as conservative a coach I've ever seen coach a football game. The way he utilizes his timeouts, especially in the first half, he's not nearly as risky. Or he's not nearly as conservative as Jerry Kill trying to push the ball down the field. But the way he manages the clock is about as conservative as I've seen. It didn't surprise me in the least in which we saw this, and I do not think for a minute this is on Sanford at all. This is 100% on PJ Fleck, and he would take that, I would assume.
And that's where you look at, I mean, if this was a new thing before Sanford, if Sanford got here, then it became incredibly conservative, we'd be talking about this is probably on Sanford. But I think it is really just Fleck in the headset saying, I really just want to run the clock out. I want to get out of here with a win. But you have to adapt and you have to change, because after those first two series went three and out,
right?
What did you expect was going to happen? And that's where you saw Minnesota pass the ball to start that final drive in regulation. But then there was run into plus one or plus two boxes, and you didn't let your best players win the game. And it's just, again, for the offense that ends up scoring 44 points. And at the end of the day, if you score 44 points in a Big Ten game, you should absolutely win. But it's just these head scratching calls where it's like, you're up three scores going fourth quarter and you lose. And it's, yeah, the defense was absolutely horrendous, but your offense didn't do anything to help them in that final 15 minutes of the game.
Yeah. It's a head scratcher. As PJ says, you got to change your best. And, you know, your best, you really, in some ways, can't get worse when it comes to the defense. With some clock management stuff, PJ has to change his best. That's just the reality of the situation.
Overall, it's the offense did well.
Yeah.
But I think the players did well. I feel bad that Ibrahim got to 41 carries when there was opportunities to spell him certainly throughout the game. And I think that's something Minnesota's got to do a little bit better. I think the other thing I want to note to people, and this is one for Derek before maybe we switch to defense, Luke, is I don't believe that Tanner Morgan has the ability to keep the ball on what looks like a zone read. Because no. I get a ton of tweets a game saying, well, if Morgan would just keep it, he's still running. Folks, I understand that, but I don't think Fleck and Sanford, I think it's designed to look like Morgan has the option to take it, but unless PJ Fleck explicitly tells him on this play you take it, I don't think it's in the design to not, I guess, just to give it to the running back. What do you think, Derek?
No, I agree. It's what they're optioning the safety on an RPO. So if they're giving a give to the running back and he's got his head up, he's not reading the defensive end and choosing whether or not he's going to keep the ball on a naked. He's reading the safety to determine if the safety comes down to play run, he's going to pull the ball out and throw to the wide receiver behind the safety. So I don't see any of these running plays that they're inside zones that they're running as optioning the defensive end with trying to fake, having the quarterback run the ball. They will at some point have him pull the ball out and run it. But if they do that, my guess is that it's going to be called that on the field. So it'll be a called play and it'll probably be in a short yardage situation. So I know people have said, why haven't they done that yet? And that's fair. I mean, the look is there. I mean, if the defensive end's crashing down, that's natural to question that. But I just think they save that and they make it a play call in short yardage. If for no other reason than Tanner Morgan, they just don't want running the ball more than a very small handful of times per game.
I think that's a little bit frustrating because I recognize there's the risk in him getting injured, but he isn't a terrible runner, right? We've seen this previously. He ran pretty well against Nebraska, the game he came in when started at quarterback. Wow, this Anixtad got hurt. Boy, that was terrible. But when Anixtad got hurt against Nebraska, he came in and actually ran the ball pretty well. It's one thing to force a defense to have to prepare even more. But I recognize that, you just don't want to get him injured and take on that risk. I guess maybe before we get to defense and talking about risk, there's obviously a way that you can insure against risk, right, Ryan? And I know you have a very favorite insurance agent.
I do, and he was actually successful this weekend and harvested a nice 8-point buck. And, luckily for me, I'm the young, spry 28-year-old, and he is 60 years old, so I was the one that got to drag it for him. So that was always good. But, yes, in terms of managing risk, that's where the Burns Insurance Agency, owned by my father, Bill Burns, believes in that service. Service, service, service. And his goal is not to be the biggest insurance agency in the world, but to be the best possible agency, putting your needs first and providing you with the service that you deserve. Now, many Gopher fans have contacted my dad, and I know one of the things they've mentioned is they didn't know that every single year when your policy comes up to be renewed, the Burns Insurance Agency, because they're an independent insurance agency, looks at State Farm, Allstate, and a host of other insurance companies to see for your home, auto, or commercial, what's the best rate for you and what's the best policy. And that's where every single year they're looking to make sure you're getting the best possible deal. And that's one of the benefits of having an independent insurance agent. So if you want a Gopher fan who is a local independent insurance agent here in the Twin Cities in the great city of Oakdale, Minnesota, there are great coverages and great savings to be found at insurancebyburns.com. Again, insurancebyburns.com.
All right, so we got to talk a little bit of defense. I know this is not going to be fun, But the reality of the situation is the defense is putting this team in situations not to win, at least here in the first two games. We've seen a deep regression. We know the storyline, right? Seven starters no longer with the team, four of which are playing in the NFL now. But let's just look real quickly. I did pull up some stats here. We talked about this earlier, Ryan, so I can't quiz you and I can't quiz Derek. But here are some stats that really are really jaw-dropping, at least to me. Minnesota is giving up 9.3 yards per play. That is last in all of football. The next closest is UMass and New Mexico, who are 7.5 yards per game. Additionally, if you look at points per game, Minnesota is third to last. The only schools lower are Northwestern and Nebraska. Minnesota is giving up 47 points per game. And then additionally, this is probably the thing that's most frustrating to me. You know, the Gophers traditionally in the Jerry Kill, Tracy Clays era, you know, they were kind of a bend but not break. They'd either give up field goals, etc. But the Gophers this season are dead last in opponents' offensive touchdowns per game with six. And I'm not even going to get into explosive plays. They're giving up an incredible number of explosive plays. But this defense, this is on par, if not worse, than the Rob Smith era, Ryan Burns.
Oh, I think it's worse, and yeah. I don't think it's close. Yeah. Because, and I talked about it this morning with Justin Gard, is when we were having this discussion, I think 2 years ago, almost to the day, when Minnesota decided to pull the trigger on Rob Smith, we knew Minnesota had defensive talent there. You knew you had Blake Cashman, Thomas Barber, Carter Coughlin, and a slew of other guys that they had the talent. They just weren't playing well. And that's where you saw a change in scheme and a change in defensive coordinator went from giving up 55 to a bad Illinois offense to then shutting down Purdue the next week to 10 points, and they were white hot coming in. And that's where you look at this team right now. And Luke, the stats are telling. Now, I don't think the stats always tell the full story, but I think they certainly are telling of this, where if you're the worst of 101 teams in FBS football that are playing this year by almost 2 yards per play, and it's bad. And I know that all three of us have rewatched this game, and I know all three of us, as we were rewatching the game, texted each other saying, good googly moogly, this is as awful as it looked. And my biggest issue is I don't know how it gets better. And I guess I hope that this is rock bottom, because Maryland ends up putting up 675 yards of total offense. And Minnesota's best defense on Friday night was Maryland imploding. Whether that was Maryland's stupid penalties, Mike Locksley's, Maryland's head coach, strange end of half and end of game theory decisions, Maryland fumbling the ball at the goal line. Minnesota's offense can't stop anyone. And to me, Derek, it starts with the linebackers. And I'm sure if Joe Rossi, Minnesota's defensive coordinator, could go back in time, I think he would absolutely recant the statement he made to me about a month ago, where he said he thought number 55, Mariano Sorry-Marin, his expectations for him this fall was that he's going to be one of the best linebackers in the Big Ten. And that's where I can make the statement. He's been one of the worst linebackers in the Big Ten. And that film rewatch of number 55, Derek, it was incredibly, incredibly, incredibly rough.
Yeah, I was anxious to see how the defensive coaching staff was going to change things in the Maryland game, you know, after having another tough one in the Michigan game. And if I look at the run scheme or how they approach run, I do see that the Gopher staff tried to call more run blitzes, tried to move the defense a little more, some stunts, some cross dogs, things like that, to try and bring some aggressiveness to the Gopher run defense. Now, when you do that, that's, you're taking on more risk. So the ability or the likelihood of a big play happening goes up. So they did get bit a couple times in that, where that's just going to happen. If you call, for every 10 run blitzes you call, you're going to have a couple that you call the wrong blitz on the wrong play and the offense catches you. So that was the case a couple times. But really, I think the majority of struggles they had defending the run were we're related to the technique and the personnel. So that's what you're getting at, Ryan. And I guess two things that stick out to me. They just have a complete and absolute inability to set an edge and maintain outside leverage. I'm not saying this to be sarcastic or to make light of it, but I don't know if this is a schematic thing they're doing on the outside or if it's just they're not executing, because they're not able to, when you're not able to set an edge outside, that's going to put pressure on the linebackers to have to scrape outside and make a play, chase down a ball carrier, or you're going to have your secondary come up fast and make a tackle in the box. And we'll get to the second part of this. That was the other thing that stood out. But if there's some sort of schematic approach they're taking where they're actually trying to spill things outside with defensive ends, it's not working because they don't have the team speed to be able to, at linebacker position particularly, to be able to scrape and chase down runs from inside to outside. If they're not trying to do that schematically, then they're just not executing on setting an edge, really, from anybody, from an outside linebacker, from a defensive end, or from a corner. And that's just killing them, whether it's the quarterback scrambling or whether it's an outside zone or a bubble screen or anything going outside. They're just not maintaining outside leverage, and that's what's turning into explosive plays. The other thing that stood out to me from a run defense perspective is the angles. The angles from the second and third level did not improve week over week. That was a problem against Michigan, and it was probably worse against Maryland. And it's exacerbated by the fact that you're not setting an edge from outside, because again, you're having to come from inside outside to make a play. But when you're running a scheme or not able to set that outside edge and you take poor angles, the result is what you saw on Saturday, just big play after big play after big play. And we can talk about the pass defense too, but that's what I saw, Ryan, from the linebacker position, specifically the run defense.
Well, here's the thing is the next question I got, even from you guys in the pre-production meeting, was who else could they throw out there? And here's a look at what PJ Fleck has recruited in his four recruiting classes that are here. In the 2017 class, they brought in only one linebacker. His name is Trenton Guthrie. He's on the team. He has never appeared in a single game, not even on special teams. 2018's class is Braylon Oliver, who is out with a knee injury that he suffered in spring practice. He's not expected to play this fall. Thomas Rush was expected to be a linebacker. He struggled in his time at linebacker. They moved him to defensive end. You saw number 8 playing on Friday night. The other linebacker in that class is number 55, Mariano Sorry-Marin. He is starting. The 2019 class, Josh Ani, I believe he's number 29. Does that sound right? 20 or 29?
I think he's 29, yeah.
And he went from playing 30 snaps defensively against Michigan, so he only played 12 on Friday night. James Gordon has played on special teams, yet he has not played a single defensive snap this fall. Now, I have heard that James Gordon contracted COVID here during the fall, and maybe his conditioning isn't up to where it needs to be, but in that same respect, I think he needs a shot. Donald Willis has played number 20. Donald Willis is number 20. Josh Ani's number 29. Donald Willis has played 7 defensive snaps, and it hasn't been great in those 7 defensive snaps. And then you look at the true freshman class. Cody Lindenberg, number 45, is starting. Jaquandus Burns, who was expected to potentially work in, he's still recovering from COVID, and he did not travel with the team, as far as I know, to Maryland. Lucas Finnessy is hurt, and Tank Brown isn't going to be playing this fall as well. So I look at it, and I think to myself, I've seen what it can be or what it has been for 2 games. And I just, if you're Joe Rossi and you're looking at Donald Willis and James Gordon, how can you justify to them that they shouldn't get an opportunity over what is happening on the field? I don't know how you can, because it can't, I mean, it really can't be any worse than what's happening at linebacker. Derek mentioned it. Whether it's the linebackers are having issues diagnosing what's happening, they're a step slow, they're a step late, they're missing tackles in the open field, and it can't be any worse. And I understand Sorry-Marin's the guy that calls the plays on the defense, and he's the elder statesman, But I'm just, it has been, as Derek said, exacerbated because there's, you look at the run fit issues, and there are times where Sory Marin is just two gaps away, or he takes it and he's looking, trying to find it through the pile, and the guy is running past him, or he's a step slow and the guy turns the corner on him. And yeah, Lindenberg hasn't been much better, but he's a true freshman. And I at least think he's got the team speed to go sideline to sideline. So, Luke, I don't know, if I'm Joe Rossi and I'm the defensive coordinator, plus linebacker is my position group, I have to think that I'm going to give a long, hard look this week in practice to two guys, James Gordon and Donald Willis, because it's just clear that whatever's going on with Sory Marin right now, it needs to be fixed in practice if Minnesota is going to expect that he's going to be playing better on Saturdays.
Yeah. A couple of things that stick out to me through two games, I get this is a small sample size, but we've now played one team that is very much a spread team, right? This is Maryland, completely gashed. Michigan, which is a pro style kind of power running team, again, completely gashed. So Derek, help me now understand, you know, is this all on the linebackers? Is this a function of the defensive line not playing well? You know, when we're talking run fits, because at this point, from a run fit perspective, this defense hasn't done it either way. And typically in the past, you know, a Gopher defense might be better against, you know, a spread team and struggle more against, or, you know, a strong power running team like Wisconsin, etc. But right now it looks like they can't stop anything.
Yeah, I think schematically, the only thing I see that could change or that's really hurt them is their tendency to play a lot of off coverage with the secondary. Luke, you've talked about this many times through the years, trying to fit the scheme to the players and not the players to the scheme. So I know the Gopher coaching staff, I have to guess that their line of thinking with the off coverage is, we're going to play back, we're going to take away the big play, the downfield passing, because we don't want to give up, you know, explosive plays down the field. So we're going to take that away, we're going to play off coverage, we're going to keep everything underneath us. Well, the problem, and I don't mean to beat a dead horse, the problem with that is I don't know that they have the personnel right now to be able to defend what you're going to get out of that, which is the team pitching and catching, throwing underneath it, and guys that are going to catch and run. They haven't been able to defend space well enough to do that. And so one of my suggestions, and we'll get to it here, well, how do you get out of this? One of my suggestions would be they do have some talent and experience at the cornerback position, and I think you need to put more on their shoulders. I think doesn't mean you never play off coverage, but I think they need to put more man-to-man and more press coverage on the outside and take away some of the underneath passing. Yes, you're going to risk some downfield passes, but you're going to take away some of that pitch and catch. I don't know if anybody caught this, but in the Michigan halftime of the Michigan State game, which Michigan offense struggled in as opposed to how they did against Minnesota the week prior, Urban Meyer was asked about Michigan and specifically the quarterback. And he mentioned that he said, look, in the game against Minnesota, 90% of the Michigan quarterback's passing was all pitch and catch underneath. And he said, what Michigan State is doing is they're challenging him. They're all press everywhere. They're trying to challenge the Michigan quarterback, it's his first year, his first or second start, I should say. And they're trying to force him to throw difficult routes downfield, like corner routes and things like that, where he's got to hold onto the ball longer. He's got to go through more progression. So what I saw, just getting back to the game on Friday, is the Maryland quarterback had a really good day. We probably shouldn't go without saying that. He looked very really true. Good.
Yes.
So his reads and actually his throws, he actually made a handful of throws that even with really good execution and scheme on defense, he just made some great plays. So got to give them credit for that. But the pass coverage on defense is just too easy to read. It's off coverage. It's too easy. They're not mixing coverages or disguising coverages, which has been a hallmark of Joe Rossi's success over the past 15, 17, 18 games. He's done a really good job of that, and they just haven't done that this year. And I got to believe they just think they aren't in a position to do that yet. So That's one of the things I think they can do moving forward. How do they change this? I think that's one of the things they can do.
Well, the interesting part is you note the corner play, and that's where you saw, I don't think saying got burned would be the right depiction of what happened, but St. Juice, I thought Tungavaiola threw a perfect ball on a post route to St. Juice guy. But the issue is the Maryland receiver. Yeah. He gets a great catch and then just happens to be a Maryland guy to kind of pick St. Juice there. But Maryland's receiver is running uncontested down the field. He gets to the 30 yard line of Minnesota. He just starts looking around, slowing down, kind of slowly taunting the defense there. And it's just, so St. Juice gets benched, or at least it appeared to be, because then Terrell Smith came into the game, number four, and I was not impressed. And I think there were a couple times in that fourth quarter where it looked like, I mean, Maryland was throwing right at him because he's sitting in off coverage. I believe PFF was credited saying they threw it Terrell Smith six times and there were six completions for, I think, 90 some yards and a touchdown. And I just don't know how you bench St. Juice there, because I don't think the options behind him are that great. And again, you can talk about PJ Fleck recruiting, because Terrell Smith is now in year three. He needs to be a lot better, needs to be better in coverage. He got burned on a post route for a touchdown where the kid just ran a post at him in off coverage. And Terrell Smith does a spin and he's wide open for a touchdown. And there was another play where he's in off coverage. He has to come up and make the tackle in space. He misses. The receiver hits the pylon and he's ruled down at the one. You have to put more trust in St. Juste and Durr, because if you're not going to put trust in them in this defense, as Derek alluded to, who else are you going to trust? Because I thought the safeties played better and I thought they played a little bit more consistent, but we also come back down to, what player on this defense do you trust in right now to make a play? Luke, I mean, is there anyone that immediately comes to mind for you?
I don't think on a consistency level there's a player that I can say is going to make a play. Guys that I think that could make a play would be Lindenberg, Boye Mafe, D'Angelo Carter, because come on, guys, that was pretty awesome. A guy that picks a ball and switches hands at, what, 300 pounds running down the field.
I enjoy watching, and as a fellow former offensive lineman, I enjoy watching fellow fat people run down the field and rumble, bumble, and stumble. And did you see him with the stiff arm?
It was so good.
I mean, Derek, that's a dream, is you finally get the ball and you're plodding down the field and you hit a kid with a stiff arm. I mean, that's something you're never going to forget. But
yeah, that is this moment in the sun for sure.
But that's where we get back down to, who on this defense can make a play? And last year, you knew Kamal, Thomas, Williamson, Coughlin, Winfield, they all can make plays. And through two games, and yes, you can scream to the ether that Ryan, limited sample size, two games, give these guys some time. Sure, you can give them some time, but I don't know that time is going to be a benefit for some of these guys if they just don't have the sideline to sideline speed, or they don't have the intellect to know, okay, this is the angle I have to take. I know how fast I am. I know how fast he is. This is the angle I have to take, because you're watching guys take some of these angles. And if they would just take a better angle, it's say an 11 yard gain instead of a 51 yard gain, or it's a 6 yard game instead of 76 to the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like a prime example of that would be Tungavaiola's spin rushing touchdown. Thomas Rush has inside leverage on the right tackle. He beats him inside and Sorry Marin comes off the edge. As Derek talked about to start this defensive segment, he is the edge there. He has to make sure, because Rush is going inside. Obviously Tungavaiola is going to not want to go inside because that's where Rush is. So he spins off his right shoulder. And because Sorry Marin takes a poor angle, he spins around Sorry Marin and he's unattested into the end zone for a touchdown. I mean, you have to be smarter about some of the things that you do. And that's where I'd love to see some personnel changes this week, because I mean, It's attributed to Albert Einstein, but I don't believe it's his quote. When we've talked about this for years on this podcast, you know, it's the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result. Why are we expecting different results in just 7-8 days for this defense if they don't make some changes? So, Derek, I mean, I've talked about the personnel changes. Schematically, is it really, you know, what could they possibly do to lessen the load on the linebackers besides putting more on the corners? Is there anything else? Because I'm still not incredibly impressed with the defensive line, but I don't know. I want to offer everyone solutions to how Minnesota's defense gets better in the next couple of weeks, but I'm drawing it a blank.
Well, if you continue with that line of thinking, the way to flesh that out is you put more pressure on the corners. Well, what does that afford you? Well, then you can use your safeties in run support. So if you run, which in turn means you can be more aggressive with run blitzes and things like that up front, because you then have another player at the third level who's able to capture, you know, anything that would leak through, or one of those run blitzes that backfires and a guy comes through untouched. So what that gives you, you know, that's what that schematic change does, is if you combine putting some more press coverage, which, by the way, Coney Durr is, he can play press, man press. Yes, he's done it for years. He did it. He had a great pass breakup in the end zone on Friday. So he's proven he's able to do that. And I think Ben St. Juice can as well. So if you do that, what that affords you is another player. They don't need to be lined up in the box necessarily, but if you run too high pre-snap and you put more pressure on the outside, one of those two safeties can come down quickly and run support. So you can be more aggressive with your front seven, particularly on running plays. So that's going to, and then if you combine that with the, that would be the schematic change. The technique change, if you can get your hard edge set outside, so if you have the philosophy that we're going to set a hard edge, everything is going to get funneled back to that safety or a backside linebacker. So if you're pursuing the way you need to pursue, which running from inside out and chasing things down the outside, if you're setting a hard edge, everything is going to funnel back to that pursuit. And the last thing, you kind of touched on it, Ryan, but the last change is you could look at personnel changes. I don't know, you know much more than I do in terms of what they have and where they could go, but if you're going to be up against a team with the type of lateral speed and scheme that Maryland has, and I know there's a couple more on the schedule that run a similar offense, you might look at bringing in another, perhaps a nickel corner or a strong safety or someone who traditionally plays strong safety. If you're thin at linebacker, you could run another one of those guys and literally line them up at linebacker. So you could bring another guy in the box, take out one of your traditional linebackers and run with a faster, undersized player to try and bring some more team speed, which I think on the personnel side is what you're alluding to and what you're getting after, is how do you fix things personnel wise? Well, you need some more team speed. And so that would be an option. I don't know personnel wise if they have somebody ready to go and able to do that at this moment, but it might be something they would look at.
I mean, you'd love to see someone like Jalen Glaze, a true freshman, get involved, but he's still recovering from an appendectomy that happened a few weeks ago. I mean, I think Justice Harris, number 21, who's been filling in for Williamson, Yeah, I mean, he's setting an edge and he's funneling them where the linebackers and safety should be. Mm-hmm. But the key word is should be. So, I mean, when you look ahead to this game against Illinois this weekend and their starting quarterback's not going to be there, he's got COVID and they've got other guys out with contact tracing, you're going to be facing another mobile quarterback if it is Corinne Taylor. And I'd love to see Josh Ani or Donald Willis or James Gordon get more of an opportunity, because if you're telling me it's another mobile quarterback and Illinois has got a couple of good running backs and Chase Brown and Mike Epstein, I mean, you know that they're watching the tape on this Gopher defense and thinking, if we can just stretch them out sideline to sideline or put these linebackers, if I was an opposing offensive coordinator right now, I would absolutely be putting the center of my game plan on isolating Minnesota's linebackers in space, whether that's on involving the running back out of the backfield in the passing game on an arrow route or a wheel route or something like that, or whether it's just making sure that you isolate Minnesota's linebackers in space, saying if they don't make the tackle, see ya, because I just don't know how, you know, how it just improves if you don't try something new, Luke.
Yeah, you know, I did just want to reiterate. I thought Derek made a good point that in the past, Joe Rossi has done a good job of mixing coverages, and that's always difficult if you're a quarterback, because there's a couple points that you have to make, right? There's the pre-snap and then the post-snap. And always, if you can read pre-snap and you know what they're going to be in, it is so much easier to make a decision post-snap. To me, that is a thing that I'd like to see them change, is mix up coverages. But that, you know, at the end of the day, they have to be able to have confidence in the guys out there to be able to run that. And at this point, to me, what the strong signal that I'm getting is that they're not confident there.
And that's one of the things, I think that's a great point, Luke, that Daniel House, who's another fantastic young Gopher mind, has pointed out, that I know him and I have talked about, is he believes this defense is having significant issues communicating between levels. So he thinks that when he's watching the game live or watching the game back, and maybe this is something we can put to Derek, is he believes that the defensive line to the linebackers to the defensive backs are not on the same page. And he thinks that there's a lot of communication issues, especially if there's motion or there's a check at the line. I mean, Derek, have you seen anything like that when you've watched the game back to think, boy, it looks like this position group is doing one thing, but that other position group is doing a different one?
Yeah, I think that maybe not so much in pass coverage. You haven't seen too many guys streaking down the field wide open. Now, post catch, we've seen broken tackles and things like that. But I think he's right in run support and run fits. I think there's a little bit of confusion maybe, or lack of communication between the two levels on who's filling where, and maybe that's a result of the limited practice time this year, probably even more limited live reps, I'm sure. But that's a fair point. And it's particularly with some of the safety run fits and some of the things, which I think got a little better from Michigan to Maryland. But again, hesitant is the word I would use. You know, Ryan, you touched on a play, a passing play earlier, when you talked about the Ben St. Juice was in coverage and it was a slant, it was caught into the house. Well, in that particular play, the Gophers were lined up with two high safeties, but one of their safeties was committed to run on that. They didn't show it pre-snap, but post-snap, there was a play-action fake. One of the safeties committed to run, and the other one is supposed to play center field. So but it was just tentative, and he didn't get enough depth to stop that slant. And so when the ball was caught, let's be clear, Ben St. Juice should have made the tackle. So it should have been a catch for a first down, but then a tackle right there. So he missed the tackle. But when he missed the tackle, the safety was too shallow, and he's beyond the safety, and there's nobody behind him. So I think, you know, lack of communication and lack of, you know, I would also just add lack of conviction, you know, and speed and confidence in executing the scheme, I think, is part of it as well.
Oh, defense.
I don't know that there's anything else to say. I think we've covered it pretty well.
I'll close out with this. I was a very skeptical Joe Rossi hire. When it happened, I was pretty outspoken with that. Even at the end of last season, I took some heat for saying, you know, I want to see Joe Rossi have success with guys they've recruited, not with Kill and Fleck recruits, right? Because largely that was the lion's share of guys that were playing. Historically, Rossi's Power 5 defensive coordinator days, other than 2019 and the end of the 2018-2019 season, have not been great. Both at Rutgers, he was in the 30 to 35 point range in points per game. I want to believe in him, and he has had some success at Minnesota, but I do think that at the end of the day, it comes down to some of this is personnel too, and they have to recruit better. That's something that doesn't change overnight. And Ryan, you can probably attest to that more than anyone, but you can't just change things overnight. In college recruiting, even season to season, it's a process. And if they've had misses, this could be a long process.
Yeah. I mean, recruiting is the lifeblood of any college football program. And Derek mentioned it, the sideline to sideline speed from 2019 to 2020 looks like an issue. Now, I think that Newbin and Howden, in terms of the safety position, I think it's better than what people are giving them credit for. Now, Newbin has taken some very interesting angles to the ball that certainly make him look a lot slower than what he is. But it's the linebacker's position. I think, like I said, Lindenberg's got the sideline-to-sideline speed that you can improve with strength and conditioning program and whatnot. But I'm skeptical about Sauri Marin being the answer for the rest of 2020 and in 2021 and going forward at that Mike linebacker position. He doesn't have the speed to get out of a misdiagnosed play. So whether he misdiagnoses, say, he thinks it's going to be a stretch play and it actually goes to the A or B gap on the interior, he doesn't have the speed to get out of it. Or there's a lot of false steps going on when he's trying to read something. That's where he allows the offensive lineman to get on top of him too quick. And Derek would be one to tell you, it's pretty easy to hit a linebacker when he's just kind of chopping his feet in place. You don't have to worry about him ducking underneath or doing anything like that. So I think you start to see some of the progress on the D-line with guys like MJ Anderson, number three, who I thought played well. I think D'Angelo Carter has warranted more snaps. I still want to see Boye Mafe out there for 80% of the snaps. I think he was out there for 65% on Friday night. But it's a position, or it's a defensive unit that needs to be addressed, and that's where you hope that Minnesota can hold on to these 2021 guys like Avante Dickerson and Steven Ortiz and Devin Eastern and Jacob Schuster, all four-star guys that can have the athletic ability to do that. But it's something that's got to improve is the overall team speed and athleticism on this defense has to get to be played faster.
Okay. This is a time that everybody always waits for. We're going to talk a little bit of special teams after a quick ad read for the Goal Line Club. Again, so the Goal Line Club is sponsoring the 2020 Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast. If you are interested in being a member, go to goalineclub.org. I do highly recommend the virtual event. It was really fun to join on Zoom just the other week. They have coaches, they have former Gopher greats. They had Glenn Mason on. Being that it was virtual, it was a very fun opportunity for people around the country. You didn't have to be in town to be there. I think it's one of the great things that they're learning probably during the pandemic is they can make these events more accessible to people around the country because not everybody is in the greater Twin Cities area. So if you're interested, go to goalineclub.org for more details. Get signed up. Join the next preview event. I highly recommend it. Okay, Ryan.
Before we get into special teams, Luke, the line for Minnesota, Illinois just came out.
No way.
Well, here's the thing. I want you two to guess what the line is. Who do you think is favored and by how much?
So I was surprised to see that the Gophers from an S&P are still like 32. So I'm still going to take the Gophers and I'll give them 3 points.
Derek, what do you think?
That's exactly what I promise you. That's exactly what I was going to guess. So I would say 3.5 Minnesota.
Circus Sports is the outlet I'm referencing. They just released their college football odds. Minnesota is 9-point road favorites.
What?
Against Illinois. Well, here's the more shocking part. The over-under is 60 points. Can I go put the mortgage I don't bet college football. But if I bet college football and I look at an over-under with Minnesota's offense and defense of 60 points, How is Minnesota nearly we'll get into that in the preview. We'll see how that line moves. But the Gophers as a 9-point road favorite is shocking to me. But you know what also isn't shocking, Luke? The fact that Gopher special teams, again, doesn't help the team.
Yeah, well, again, we probably have to put a minor disclaimer on the whole COVID thing. I don't know how often you want to have, great backup punters and kickers and, what have you. But the fact, here's the thing that I still can't believe that we have to say. We have two kickers that are coming off of pretty significant injuries, a sports hernia and hip surgery. Like, at what point do we have to start being concerned with either how they're practicing or working out or something? Because that to me is ridiculous.
Yeah, Michael Lance has a back injury that he's still battling.
So this is three. So three of your kickers are injured.
Michael Lance has a back injury, plus I believe he was literally activated just before the game in terms of his 21 days, I believe, on the COVID list came up on Friday, that day. So he's still got a back injury, and he was coming off COVID. Brock Walker, the kicker for field goals and extra points this past week, he's got a sports hernia. Grant Rierse, the kickoff scholarship guy, he's coming off hip surgery. I mean, Luke, I'm with you. I've never heard of a specialist group with that many type of injuries. But and I want to know, I'm not talking about just the Brock Walker extra point kick in terms of the special teams doesn't, you know, exactly help the team. Brock Walker's missed extra point is not the reason they lost the game.
No,
it's not. The defense would love a word with that. The offense in the fourth quarter would love a word with that. But seemingly for the 15th straight game here, here we are talking about what. And we even mentioned in the pre-production meeting, when was the last time after a Gopher football game you thought to yourself, boy, special teams helped? I can point to one instance in the PJ Fleck era, and that's Demetrius Douglas's punt return touchdown against Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. That is the glowing moment of Rob Winger's career at Minnesota. But you look at Minnesota's special teams performance just overall, tell me how this helps the team. Matthew Stevenson averages 34 yards a punt with one inside the 20. That doesn't help your defense at all. You have kick return where Cam Wiley ends up being benched after halftime. After he takes the kickoff on to start the second half, he muffs it, and he only goes 12 yards. He ends his day with three returns for 17-yard average. And like I said, he ends up getting benched for Chris Ottman-Bell on kick return. There is no punt return because Minnesota has allowed Luke, I wrote about this, and I don't remember if you talked about it. Minnesota's defense has faced 25 drives. They have two punts on 25 offensive drives. So it's tough for me to say, yeah, considering punt return doesn't have a punt return yet because they have two punts. But it's just – it's just a culmination of everything. And then obviously Brock Walker's missed extra point, but it's Michael Lance is back doing kickoffs, but he's only kicking it to the 10. I mean, none of these things that I mentioned are helping Minnesota win a football game. And I just don't know what else has to happen. Now, I will say this, Michael Lance will now get a full week of practice in, and maybe Minnesota can kick it to the end zone on a kickoff, or maybe Minnesota can attempt a field goal of farther than 40 yards. I do expect the Australian punter, Mark Crawford, to make his debut on against Illinois. Sounds like if the game would have been played on Saturday instead of Friday, Mark Crawford would have been back because that's when his 21 days on the COVID list came up. But I do expect Minnesota to have a starting punter, a starting kicker. I mean, you two are more rational about special teams than me because I feel like I just rant and I'm just biased at this point. But is there really a moment you can point to in this game where I was like, boy, that moment for Minnesota special teams, that helped out? And that's where the silence, it is what it is. Like Preston Jelen on kickoff coverage, I guess.
He's been good.
Prior Lake's own.
Yep.
He made a few nice tackles, but it's just like, at what point does it get to be that mediocre as an entire special teams unit? The margin for error on this 2020 team, as folks can see, is incredibly thin. And if the margin for error, I mean, Derek, you mentioned it to me in the pre-production meeting, Iowa special teams has seemingly throughout Kirk Ferentz's career given them an advantage in the game. Well, in PJ Fleck's tenure here at Minnesota, when was the last time you thought, boy, I can't wait to see kick return or punt return, or I feel really confident about this, you know, this 45 yard field goal. I don't know when enough's enough. And then I don't think it's on necessarily Michael Lance or Brock Walker, those guys, because ultimately it comes back to coaching. And cause it's not just those guys, it's coverage, it's returns, it's all that in between. Now, if any of our listeners can think of an instance where you thought to yourself during PJ Fleck's tenure, other than Demetrius Douglas's punt return touchdown, boy, special teams really helped them win the game. My DMs are open. My Gopher Illustrated is always free to, or not, is always around to access. I mean, you can tweet me. But fellas, I mean, it's just the same old, same old. Here we are at the end of the day thinking, boy, wish they would have gave a little bit more.
Yeah, I think from a special teams perspective, you know, this is a unit typically that you don't want to lose on, right? And you're right, Ryan, more often they've lost than they've not. The reality of the situation, though, is in this season, you know, the defense hasn't put them in a position to get many punt returns, right? But then again, this is, again, PJ Fleck. They're very conservative, and they very rarely even not fair catch, right? I don't know. I think punt, I thought kick coverage was better this game. I think, Derek, you mentioned that when we were chatting earlier, but I think kick coverage was definitely better. I don't know. It seems to be a struggle without question. What are your thoughts, Derek?
Well, I just two thoughts. The first is the old adage, of course, is that if all things being equal in a close game, special teams is going to be the difference. And I mean, you look in this game, there's it's a 1-point game, and I wholeheartedly agree with Ryan. The loss is not on the missed extra point. There's dozens of other things that go into that. So I don't put that, meaning that was the one single difference. But as Ryan was talking about, it could have been a difference. I mean, you know, a kick return for a touchdown or a big play on special teams could have been the difference, and the Gophers could have won this by a score. I guess I can't figure out why they can't put together a better kick return team. The Gophers have, I think, Ryan, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think have recruited really well on offensive side of the ball. They have a number of good offensive skill players. They've done pretty well blocking. You know, I'm just talking about strictly on the offensive side of the ball. So why they're not able to put together a little more explosive and dynamic kick return, and this is going back to last year. I'm not sure I get that. If you look around at other teams around the league and you know, in Power Five college football, generally your explosive offenses have that usually plays into or parlays into a good kick return, because that usually means you're pretty stacked for talent on the offensive side of the ball and you can put something together, and they just haven't.
Well, I think a prime example for Gopher fans to remember is look at the two rivals. Look at them in 2019. Aaron Cruikshank for Wisconsin was an absolute weapon for Wisconsin in the kick return game. I believe he returned one to the house against Minnesota. I think he had one in their bowl game. And then you look at Amir Smith Marset, the former Minnesota commit at one time for Iowa. He's been a weapon for them as well. And you can't tell me that Trayson Potts or Daniel Jackson or, you know, one of these young, talented, or Kai Thomas even going back there, Jason Williamson, I'm open. But, it's mystifying that kick return really hasn't been – I mean, it's seemingly every time Minnesota decides to run one out, there's three unblocked guys in the kickoff unit. They're about to smack him. That shouldn't be happening. Or even just – I'm looking at the Big Ten stats right now. I mean, even on just Minnesota's kickoff coverage, they are worse than the Big Ten. Their net average is 34. The next highest is 37, and you don't want to be low on this list. Or even, you know, Matthew Stevenson with the punting game. Minnesota per net punt, dead last in the Big Ten. Minnesota yards per punt in the air, dead last in the Big Ten. I'm tired of being dead last in all these different categories, special teams-wise. And, Derek, you have a great point. Why can't Minnesota find someone like Aaron Cruikshank or Amir Smith-Marset and find a viable return team to allow them to showcase their abilities? Because I think the ability in the skill position player is there.
Yeah, I think part of it is their unwillingness to play, you know, high value guys like a Bateman. They did finally do this with Ottman Bell, but, you know, their inability to put those kind of guys out on special teams, you know, a Cruikshank or a Smith Marset, those are guys they're willing to put out there. They used to do it with Rodney Smith, and we used to beg them not to, and here I am now begging them to put, I'm not begging them to put Rashad Bateman out there, but you know what I'm saying, right?
Just Potts or Williamson or Daniel Jackson. I mean, you have options. And especially when this is a free year and everyone gets another year of eligibility regardless, why not? I mean, the opportunity cost is so low, yet the ceiling for what could happen, I think, is so high. But here we are.
All right. We lost Derek, so I'm going to loop him back in. All right, so I think we're nearing here the end of this. We've talked a lot of offensive improvements that can be made, especially in the fourth quarter. We've talked the massive defensive struggle and the fact that, you know, if they're going to have success this year, it's going to have to come from the defense, because you've got an offense that's going to be able to score enough points most weeks in and most weeks out. But, you know, special teams also just can't hurt you. But I guess let's just close this thing out. Maybe some final parting thoughts as we go into the last, six games of the season. Well, I guess there will be seven guaranteed. We just don't know who it is, right? So six games left, Derek. Any parting thoughts to try and salvage, this pandemic shortened season?
Well, I think the offense will be fine. We did come down pretty hard on the play calling or the strategy as the game wore on. And that's something that, that the coaches can reflect on and hopefully change going forward. But I think the offense is explosive. I think they have, again, a good foundation that they're able to run the ball against even boxes, which is going to be a challenge for defenses. And that's going to parlay into a good passing game. And I think they have explosiveness and talent. On defense, it's going to be a challenge. And it's going to be, I think, if I had to guess, it's going to be a mixture of, yes, some schematic changes. But really, I think more so this time than the Rob Smith changeover a few years ago, I think the changes are more going to come on the execution technique side and maybe in the personnel side, as Ryan is talking about. We may see some changes there, to try and get some guys in there and change things up and see if that mix, changes starting with Illinois this next weekend.
Yeah, offensively, I'm not incredibly worried. I mean, we've seen the offense move the ball against a pretty good defense in Michigan. We've seen them move the ball at will against a not so good defense in Maryland through three quarters. You just want them to stay aggressive. Stay aggressive for 60 minutes with Tanner Morgan, with Rashad Bateman, with Chris Ottman Bell. Continue to involve the tight ends. You only had one tight end target on 15 throws. I mean, I hear what you say. I trust what you do. I saw that they involved the tight ends more against Michigan, then we saw that take a step back. And then I think, what does Minnesota do at that left guard spot? Because if Axel is out coming up here against Illinois, I don't know what the solution is. I don't know if it is Nathan Bowe, Austin Byer, maybe sliding Andrews back in there and putting J.J. Gaudet out at right tackle. There needs to be continuity at that left guard spot, and you need to figure out what the solution there is. Defensively, I'd love to see some personnel changes, because I don't know how else to change it. I mean, Derek laid it out very well schematically. I don't know how Minnesota changes it, because they need their linebackers to play a lot better. They need them to tackle better. They need them to shed blocks better. They need them to take better angles of pursuit. They need them to scrape over the top better. They need them better in coverage. That's a lot of asks. And to do that in 8 days is a tough ask. So I'd love to see Josh Ani, Donald Willis, and James Gordon get more opportunities here in the coming weeks. And then special teams-wise, I'm excited to see what Mark Crawford looks like. You know what, Luke, I'm going to end on a positive note with special teams. I'm excited to see what the 26-year-old Australian punter can do. As I said, I believe he's going to be back punting in his first collegiate game, and knowing that, you know, I hope he booms 150 yards, and I am just standing up and down, giving a standing ovation to Minnesota's new punter. But I'm excited to see what he can do. And as we mentioned, I have no idea how Minnesota is allegedly a 9-point favorite on the road, considering what they've looked like. More importantly, Luke, I have no idea how the under for that game is 60 points. When I believe Illinois has given up 30 plus in both of their games, Minnesota's given up 45 plus in both of their games, and Minnesota's offense is going to put up points. It's too good to not put up points.
Right.
So I think, again, we're only through 25% of the season. Hopefully Friday night is rock bottom. I still think Minnesota can absolutely win some games, but until we see improvement from the coaching and from the players defensively, I don't know how you can pick a Minnesota game going forward to think, yep, I think the Gophers can get enough stops defensively that they can win this ball game.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And I think this year in particular, you're going to see teams just start to give up more, right, with the fact that there's not a lot to play for and the whole COVID shortened season. I really hope that the Gophers can find a way to turn some things around, because I want to watch competitive ball games. As frustrating as the game was on Friday night, it was an entertaining game from a scoring standpoint, lots of points. But then again, it will be interesting to see how this year plays out. Hopefully we see a lot of improvement. I want to thank Derek for joining us again. It's always fun to have you on. Your insight is second to none, and I know that our listeners appreciate it greatly. Want to thank the Goal Line Club and the Burns Insurance Agency. Make sure you check out their websites respectively. Thank you for listening, and go Gophers.